Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. As always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm, at A.H. Malcolm on the Twitterses. Of course, RedState.com is where he's posting all of his great columns, and sometimes his memories are clear. And actually, that doesn't sound quite as good as I thought it did. His memories columns are in the clear. Your memory's always in the clear. Clear memory. So this is... It's hard to keep up with how the world keeps changing, Andrew. I mean,
yes. It's really exciting, and the speed and the drama of it is increased because for 4 years we had the Shuffler in chief, and everything was pretty somnolent except for the crises that he caused. Shock and awe, Trump shock and awe, and the Democrats, it's worked on the Democrats. They don't know what to do. And it appears by their choice of a new chairman that they're sticking with the same old.
Oh, I mean, did you see some of that stuff that they were doing at the DNC meetings? I mean, I've written about a couple of things, right? But did you see some of that stuff? I have a post coming up later today. By the time this goes up on Tuesday, it's going to be already up. But there's the guy at the DNC who's running the elections, right? Stands up and basically says, you know, we've got these seven positions open and we've got two men and two women, but you all haven't elected a non-binary person. So we're going to change the rules to make sure that we get a non-binary person in there.
Yeah.
It's like, seriously, you're changing the rules in the middle of an election to impose your DE, to impose your quota system. It's a quota system.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how, well, they're going to survive. It's just, and the point of my column was that conservatives shouldn't get too cocky because both major American political parties have shown an unusual historical strength for survival. By morphing and changing, and sometimes it happens just in between leap years. So, as it did in the 60s, and I wrote about that one. So, yeah, it's fun to watch. I said in the column on Sunday, it's karma. It's like those dash cam videos that you see online of a road rage driver pulling some dangerous stunt. It just happens to pull it on a state trooper.
Okay.
Oops.
I got to admit something here. Since you brought it up, I've got to admit something. I'm kind of addicted to those videos.
Oh, yeah.
On YouTube. I mean, it's totally an adrenaline rush, right? I mean, these arrest videos and it's a guilty pleasure. I've been kind of binging out on those.
there's nothing wrong with it because it shows that sometimes good wins.
right
and it's encouraging.
I don't know, sometimes I think it's just a way of reminding ourselves how stupid human beings can be at times, but beyond that, that plays into what you're talking about here, because the DNC had a chance to reset at their meetings last week, right?
Oh, isn't that amazing?
And instead of resetting, you had Jonathan Capehart, who is no longer at the Washington. Is he still at the Washington Post? He may still be at the Washington Post.
Who cares?
Well, yeah, exactly. Getting up and saying that, well, how many people think that sexism or racism is the reason why Kamala Harris didn't get elected? And everybody in the room raises their hands and he says, good, you all passed. And it's like, really? You think that that's the reason? It's not the fact that she couldn't complete a coherent sentence. It's not the fact that she wouldn't actually address what she was going to do differently than the four disastrous years that she was vice president. It's that people don't like her because she's Black and she's a woman. Even though the nation elected Barack Obama to the presidency for two straight terms, you know, not all that long ago, but racism.
Yeah. Well, You can't explain it. I mean, it's good for conservatives in the sense that things are tight now, and I wouldn't get too cocky about the midterm elections. Usually those are a verdict on the first 2 years of a presidency. And in Trump's case, it could well mark the beginning of his lame duckness. But right now, it's very pleasurable to watch. I mean, it's like plane. Oh, it's an airplane, a pilot on a plane doing everything wrong, and then thinking that if he does some more of it, it'll work.
But you know, well,
that's the definition of insanity. Yeah,
but what I find interesting, though, about the last 2 weeks. Now, it's been 2 weeks today, I think, 2 weeks since Donald Trump took office.
Yep.
And I've never seen anything like this. And I think it was Neil Ferguson writing in The Telegraph or Times of London. I take it back. And this got passed around to me internally. And he was saying, if you think you've never seen anything like it, it's because you weren't around in 1933. And just for S's and G's, I'm just going to stipulate that neither Andrew nor I were around in 1933. We might look like we were around in 1933, but we weren't. But 1933 is when, you know, FDR took office on March 4th. That was the inauguration date when FDR first took office and completely transformed the federal government within days, right? By executive orders, by expanding different things, by implementing his New Deal legislation and all of that. And he says, this has been the most transformative 2 weeks that we've ever seen. Some of this is going to stick and some of it isn't, but this is much more ambitious than Donald Trump was in his first term. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he lost the last time and he now has a much better sense of what it is that he wanted to do in that first term. And I've seen this expressed. I'm really kind of curious to get your reaction to this. Especially because of your column, Trump has left Democrats dazed, demoralized, deluded, and leaderless. I mean, maybe Democrats would have been better off letting him win in 2020.
And then they'd be done with him.
They'd be done with him by now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, hindsight's 2020, of course, but.
Well, I don't think we would have been better. I mean, if this was a difficult yep. 4 years, and especially difficult for Trump, who endured all that lawfare and amazing amount of attacks. I don't know how anyone survives that mentally. But he learned from that experience, obviously. And he's behaving and acting much more effectively, I believe, this time. And I find that very encouraging. I attribute a lot of it to Susie Wiles, but he's the one that goes along with it, and his name is on the administration. So if he agrees with her, it becomes his. You can see a number of times reporters trying to goad him, as it would have in the first term so effectively, asking, well, what do you think about Mitch McConnell not voting for Pete Hegseth? And he said, really? He didn't? Well, I'm not going to talk about that now. And I mean, that is so un-Trumpian first term. And it shows, first of all, that's what caused all the impression of tumult in his first term. Was all the fights. He couldn't resist punching back for even the, a little tiny insult on the corner in some city somewhere, and he would punch back. And the media loved it because it's conflict. It drove their business, their clicks, and they had a wonderful time, and you saw what happened to a lot of them. The bottom fell out when he lost in 2020, so they're glad to have him back in that sense. But he is smarter, so he doesn't fall for that stuff. He's got his eye on what he really wants to do, and he's doing it. And the speed and the breadth of what he's doing has just overwhelmed Democrats. and the media too. They can't keep up. And that's good for Trump because they can't organize fights around everything. He did them one at a time in his first term, his attempted changes. And then they've got into all kinds of lawsuits. I think, you know, the people say that it's hopeless that to change this birthright citizenship. I think probably technically it is, but they focus on that, and there's already a lawsuits, and that's fine. You know, it's like a magician. You pay attention to what I'm doing with my right hand while the left hand does all the smooth, savvy stuff. So I think it's very encouraging. And I agreed with almost everything Trump did in his first term. At this time, he's doing even more and doing it more effectively.
Well, you know, I think that there's, I think that there are, there's value in bringing up the birthright citizenship thing. I don't think you're going to be able to do that by EO. It's going to take at least a statute to settle that question. The USAID thing, you know, is actually, there's a little bit more to that, because it's not totally within Trump's control. It is within the executive branch, though, and he can gum it up for a very long time while he's trying to, you know, bring it, you know, under control. And I wonder if they can even challenge it, because I don't know who's going to have standing to sue over what he's doing over at USAID. And, you know, this is the big story today, of course, or over the weekend, is that basically they shut down USAID. Marco Rubio, you know, locked everybody out. This is, you know, Elon Musk's Doge thing. They tried to take a look at the books, and the people at USAID wouldn't let them do it. So they locked everybody out, shut down the websites. And Marco Rubio today declared that he was now the acting director of USAID. And they were going to pause operations there until they got a really good close look at the books. And, you know, members of Congress are freaking out. Well, Democrat members of Congress are freaking out over this. These are the same people, Andrew, that didn't say a word to criticize Joe Biden unilaterally declaring that he'd amended the Constitution or unilaterally appropriating himself $400 billion to pay off student loans. Yeah. Suddenly, right, they discovered con law, which is what my post on this just went up as we were talking. But I mean, those are the fights that may actually be worth having.
Yeah. Yeah. And this time he knows how Washington works. He knows the tricks. He's rooting out those who would undermine it quietly, the deep state. And he's more determined. I mean, I just can't get over emotionally how someone could come through all of that lawfare. I know Trump likes the publicity of conflict and fights, and that was what The Apprentice was. And that part is showbiz. That's fine. But I just emotionally and financially come through all that stuff and just keep plugging away, and one by one, all the troubles go away. And he's just shown such endurance that he got a mandate this time. I think people get the message, not just that they didn't like Biden, but that they hope that Trump could do something. He sure as hell is.
Well, yeah. I mean, and again, I think that doing something is sort of the point here, right? Because we've had 4 years of having a sede vacante presidency, right? An empty seat. And
Ed, I don't speak Italian or Gaelic. What did you just say?
Sede vacante. Come on, man. This is Latin. give me a little room here. I'm Catholic. Sede vacante, empty seat. Literally means empty seat. And the only reason I know this, right, is because that was what it was called between Benedict XVI's retirement and Pope Francis's election, right? I mean, technically Benedict was still there, so it wasn't quite sede vacante, but that's what they called it, sede vacante. So I learned the term, And it's come in very handy over the last couple of years.
This has
very clearly been an empty seat in the Oval Office. Other people are making those decisions. Joe Biden wasn't making those decisions. And so what I'm talking about here is just leadership, right? Doge is one thing, right? People are going on and on about Elon Musk delving into these things, and he doesn't have any business delving into it. And there was one argument that a private citizen shouldn't be looking at these things. It's like, that's nonsense. This should be transparent. This is not secretive. These are grants from a U.S. governmental organization. They should all be transparent. And the point is that Musk is pointing these things out, but it's Trump that's using his authority to shut this down. It's part of the executive branch. Now, it's statutorily created or statutorily amended, I should say, in 1998, so that there is some independence and there's some things that you can't transfer to the State Department. Well, that's going to be a fight in the courts. And I think Trump's like, yeah, that's great. Sue me. In the meantime, nothing over here is going to move. I'm not funding any of these left-wing nutcase things. And Chip Roy and Marco Rubio's and Elon Musk are throwing out all the things that this money was being spent on, and it looks terrible. And that's the point. Yeah. He's kind of ripping the masks off here. And I think there's some value to that.
Oh, there's great value to that. And it underlines the importance of transparency. As Trump did early on with the Kennedy and King assassination records. Why not? Why can't the people see it?
You know, I'm curious about that, too, because, both Kennedys, right? 63 and 68, John and Bobby. And of course, Martin Luther King was also 1968. That's 57 years ago, man. I was 5 years old when the latter two were assassinated. I was 8 months or 7 months old when JFK was assassinated.
You're kidding. Oh, my God. I was in college.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, Andrew. I'm old.
You're just a young sprout.
But I'm saying that whatever secrets there were that needed to be protected probably don't apply anymore and probably haven't in 40 years. I think the idea here is that there's going to be things that embarrass people in this. But that's true of the USAID stuff too, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Those files that are going to embarrass people, and that's why they don't want them exposed. And that's the reason why you have to have transparency, so we stop doing embarrassing crap.
Since then, we've learned to attribute everything that we don't know about to a conspiracy. But the truth is, there may have been one. The enduring conspiracy that the CIA was really involved with killing Kennedy, Jap President Kennedy, then all this stuff needs to come out. And I can't believe that the people, 57 years? So that means that somebody had to be over 90 now, if they're still alive, who was involved in any alleged conspiracy back then. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. It should be out. To me, it's refreshing. It's like how many presidents? There were four or five presidents who said, we're going to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And then they didn't. So Trump just did. Ever since Clinton, at least, presidents have said, well, we need to talk to Kim Jong-un or the North Korean regime. But nobody did until Trump. And he did it in an unorthodox way, but I think that's why it worked. It was unorthodox. And there is an element of show business. There's diplomacy is show business to make things look. Remember Chamberlain getting off the plane, waving a pack of papers? Well, that's show business too. So it's...
Well, there's always been a performative aspect of politics. I mean, always.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
I mean, one of my One of my favorite movies, even though there's all sorts of anachronisms in this thing, and there's all sorts of ways you can pick this movie apart, but one of my favorite movies about politics is The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, right? And then we can get into the fact that practically everybody in that movie was too old to play the parts that they were supposed to be playing, right? I mean, almost every one of them was too old for those roles. There's so much good, interesting commentary on politics and human nature in that. Right down to the best line of the whole thing is, you know, when the truth, it's, and I don't even have the line in front of me, but, you know, when the truth meets the legend, print the legend, which is, you know, how the media treats it. And that we think of that as new, and it really isn't. I mean, that's really not new at all. That's just human nature, right?
Yeah.
The idea that, you know, who was it? Was it John Barrymore that played the guy at the convention who was, I mean, you have to see this movie again, watch it again, and tell me that he's not playing John Kerry. I mean, this is, it's always been performative, right?
And you remember in The Candidate with Robert Redford,
who was, oh gosh, I haven't seen that in ages, but yes, that's a good movie too.
The two parts that I just treasure was him getting in the car after giving speech after speech after speech, and he starts another one in the back of the car, and then goes blah 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 blah, and then they're all planning they're all planning to get publicity by tying up traffic in downtown, I think it was San Francisco, with creating their own traffic jam. And as they're planning it in the hotel room, the lunch arrives from the deli. And the guy says, all right, look, first things first, who had the corned beef with mayo?
Well, that is first things first. I mean, you got to eat first.
Yeah.
But so much of politics is performative. Even leadership to a certain degree is performative, but you have to show up. And Trump is showing up very much so in the first 2 weeks. And
as did Ronald Reagan.
As did Ronald Reagan. As did Bill Clinton, too. I mean, Bill Clinton was everywhere, you know. Yeah. Obama, for that matter, he was everywhere, put his name on everything. He kept passing the buck to, well, we inherited this problem. I mean,
yeah.
And Trump's doing that a little bit, but of course, he's only been in office 2 weeks, too. So, I mean, the little of that goes is acceptable. And if we're talking, if he's still saying that 6 months down the road, then people are going to start saying, look, it's you now, dude. So, you know,
own it. Yeah.
You own it. But, But to get back to that point, I mean, and I want to tie this in with, you know, the things that you've been writing, is that I actually think that the reason why they're dazed, demoralized, deluded, and leaderless is because of that last word. They are really leaderless.
Yeah.
They don't have, there's
nobody.
There's, you know, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, they brought something to the table, right? I mean, I didn't like either one of those guys being elected president. But they had a kind of a vision. I think Obama's was particularly poisonous. He wanted to fundamentally transform, the United States of America. And what Trump is doing largely is radically transforming it back. Yeah. But, you know, Bill Clinton had this sort of fusion argument. He was going to marry the old and the new. He was going to bridge the gap and all that kind of stuff. And after the first 2 years, when he kind of started doing the radical thing, he reversed and kind of went back to the center, triangulated, and had a pretty good presidency. Not to mention a pretty good Oval Office. No, I'm not going to go there. I'm sorry. That was crass. But they don't have it. There's no vision here. I mean, you look at that DNC. Their vision was putting David Hogg as vice chair of the DNC. David Hogg, who is a Twitter troll. He's never organized anything. At one point, he wanted to organize a company to compete with MyPillow, right? And Mike Lindell is, you know, crazy as a bedbug, but he's actually pretty good at making making pillows, right? Hey, he's a good businessman. I mean, all other things aside, he's a really good businessman. And he, you know, David Hogg wanted to put him out of business. And I think he got like $4.6 million in startup money and fell flat on his face and ended up having to pull out of it. It's some outfit called Good Pillow. I don't even know if they exist any longer. I mean, this guy hasn't done anything in his life except exist on Twitter.
Yeah, well, it shows their desperation.
Desperate.
And they don't. Well, first of all, it starts with, what did you do wrong in 2024?
Yes.
And they refuse to address that. And everything in 2024 was cosmetic, right? They let, for traditional reasons, they let Biden want to run for a second term, even though he said he was going to be a transition person. And they let it go on too long. And they thought, well, maybe we can skate through and whoever's making the decisions can keep on making them. And it'll look like he's president, but he really isn't, except when he falls down. But he, and talk about hubris and karma, right? Was the debate in June where Biden was exposed as being non-compos mentis, and he's the one that issued the challenge. He thought, he and his crowd thought, they could finish Trump off by having an early debate, and then they could control things during the summer. And guess what? and he went, fell into a 90-minute coma, Biden did. So he got his comeuppance. They lasted for what, another month or so, but and that kind of crippled Kamala's plans. But Kamala was the if they didn't make Kamala the fallback candidate, they would have had hell to pay with the blacks. Now it turned out they didn't do well with the blacks anyway, but the format is that you go to the vice president, so they did. And the conniving, cynical beauty of the whole thing is that Schumer and Pelosi knew. One, they knew that Biden, I said this in the column, they knew that Biden was going to lose to Trump. So we're going to lose. So let's do a Hail Mary with Kamala, a Kamala Mary. Hail Kamala.
Hail Harris. Hail Harris.
Yeah, we'll do a Hail Harris. And she'll probably lose too, but then guess what? We're rid of both of them. So, I mean, it's so cynical. I mean, I suppose it's good for the country, but then they end up with nobody to run the show.
Well, and that's the thing, if they had, and this is part of the whole thing about cooking the election. And this is the reason why this happening at the DNC was all sorts of levels of irony, right? This guy gets up there. I mean, you know, I had the video up there about this guy basically trying to cook the election so that they can get their non-binary person on their board, some office. Some, I don't know if it was one of the vice chairs, because they have multiple vice chairs. I think the RNC does too. But at any rate, it was an officer election. And without a hint of recognition that they're in the position that they're in because they cooked the primary last year.
That's right.
And kept Joe Biden from being challenged, right? They cooked the primary so that he couldn't be challenged and he didn't have to compete. And then when, as you said, they pulled this stupid stunt with the debate in June and end up having to pull him out, they don't have another competitive process. They had a convention coming up in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
They could have set that up as a competitive convention, allowed everybody to get into the mix, and just keep doing rounds at the convention. A typical open convention. That's why conventions exist. It's a backup. It's a backup in case
primaries don't give you a winner. Sorry, in 1924, they had 104 ballots in the New York City Democrat convention.
Yeah, they didn't win. They didn't win the general election.
He lost the Coolidge.
Yeah, he lost to Coolidge. This was Al Smith, right? And he lost to Coolidge.
No, it was John Davis.
Oh, you're right. It was John Davis. That's right. Al Smith was 28, and he lost to Herbert Hoover, if I remember correctly.
Hubert Hoover, yes.
Hubert Hoover. Hubert Heaver.
That's right.
But, and I was there for that, so I should know. Anyway.
You know what? Just as a historical trivia, 1928 was the last time that a cabinet member became president.
That's right. Yeah. Don't become a cabinet member with the idea that you're going to wind up being president. Something Nikki Haley might have wanted to think about when she was running in the primary. Anyway, but at least Republicans had a competitive primary, right? They didn't just hand it to Donald Trump. In fact,
no, that's right. Absolutely. You know,
they made him a better candidate. Well, let me put it this way.
No, they did. They did. And it gave the appearance of competition and openness. And he was, I wrote a column back when he was thinking about running, and I said, no, he's got to earn it. And he did. So no problem.
Yeah, it became very clear that Republican voters wanted him back. And a lot of us were skeptical that he could win the election. And it turned out that he could. And it turned out to be a good decision, especially when you're looking at the first 2 weeks of his presidency, where he's actually following through and doing all the things that he said he was going to do. Maybe not necessarily in the order that he, you know, was hoping, or that we were hoping that a couple of things got done, but he's getting around to all of this. He's been a very active guy. He's, you know what it is? It's vigor.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've seen this level of vigor in the presidency. I don't even really think I saw it in the first Trump term. And there's reasons for that. He was handicapped by the whole Russia collusion thing. And, you know, the transition was interrupted by that. And there was all sorts of interference in that.
Like I said, he's a new man now. Yeah.
He is a new man. But, and maybe since the assassination attempt, it reinvigorated him. But,
What happened his first weekend as the returned president? What did he do? He didn't go off to the beach in Delaware or anywhere, Mar-a-Lago. Yeah, he went. Well, no, he went. Trump went to North Carolina, and then he went to California. Yeah,
I think this past weekend he was. He may have been in the White House this past weekend.
I don't think he did anything on Saturday or Sunday, but
he's.
Taking 2 days off instead of 40% of his first 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, it's he's been a dynamo. And I don't think I've seen that really since Bill Clinton. Not even Obama. Obama was cool, right? He was kind of cool and a little bit more laid back. I don't think I've seen the dynamo effect since Bill Clinton first came into.
Bill Clinton was the last president until this time who picked a vice president who could become president, who could be elected president after him, who had ambitions. Cheney was too old, but he was wise for Bush's use. Biden was too old, but he was useful to have an old Washington face for Obama.
And then he turned out to run for president eventually.
You know what? J.D. Vance, he's almost just under half as old as Trump. I just love it. I mean,
people are saying, oh, well, you know, maybe we should rethink the 22nd Amendment and the term limits on the presidency. No, we don't need to do that. Trump's going to be 82. At the end of this,
no, that's old enough. Yeah,
enough. You know, we've done that enough. Now let's move on. And the thing is that Republicans have people like J.D. Vance and Ron DeSantis, who are ready to step up and lead.
That's right.
And to get to your point, I don't see anybody in the Democrat Party who can inspire to provide inspirational leadership on the path that the Democratic Party is on.
I believe there's two reasons for that, Ed, and they're very important. One, Democrats as the party of central government almost always turn with very few exceptions, to Washington to pick their candidates.
Right.
I think a senator has been the vice presidential pick of every Democrat since 1936. They don't have a farm team. And then in 2010, because of Obama's disastrous overreach with Obamacare and $1 trillion stimulus that didn't stimulate anything, he got wiped out, a historic loss of 63 House seats. And Obama doesn't care. He didn't care about state level stuff. It was all about him. But that election wiped out an entire generation or two of Democrats who would be coming up through the states. Republicans, in the meantime, have had, I think at one point we had 34 or 36 of the governorships, and 16 of them of those states, Republicans controlled both houses. So we've got a farm league that is bringing guys up all along the way, and Republicans who typically turn to the states for candidates have a plethora of potentials, and Vance was one of them.
All right, got one last topic for you before we head off to the jokes of the week, and this is actually, I think, almost a joke of the week. It's just popped up, so I'm gonna put, this is a part of. This is the part of the program where I blindside Andrew Malcolm. So here's Deadline. Just went up. Well, it went up a little earlier. I just saw it, though. Joe Biden signs with Creative Artists Agency in all areas. Oh. Andrew,
well, he'll get a fortune for a book that someone else will write for him. I just can't believe.
To do what? I mean, he doesn't actually need CAA to flack a book. I mean, he really doesn't. He could flack a book.
No, but he wants $200,000 speeches. Was it Clinton got, what, was it 400 grand to speak in Moscow?
500 grand. Got $500,000 to speak in Moscow that time, yeah.
And they probably paid for his hotel room, too.
If you probably, too, and probably the plane trip, too, but... if you paid Joe Biden $200,000 for a speech, that would work out to about, what, $40,000 a word?
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez.
I mean...
You get more words with Kamala. They just wouldn't make any sense.
I got to say, this actually occurred to me over the weekend that we haven't seen Biden. Since he left the White House, and no,
he went to another borrowed billionaire's house in Southern California.
Yeah, and I'm wondering. I'm actually really wondering. I mean, I guess the CAA thing is an indication that we're going to hear more from him, which is not exactly high up on my priority list of things in my life. But I was actually wondering whether we'd ever hear from him again, because I don't think the guy was there. I think this was the weekend at Bernie's presidency, especially for the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know.
I guess, you know, the Biden Incorporated's got to find some way to cash in on the big guy, but that's... It says Donald Trump might be absorbing all the political oxygen right now, but his successor and predecessor isn't ready to totally exit the stage yet.
He yes, exited he is, whether, the stage mentally. He's gone.
He exited the stage, I think, in 2019. yeah.
Oh, that's so sad. Well, I have one joke, Ed.
Okay, I got a couple.
Jimmy Fallon. These are all old. A 92-year-old Florida woman marries an 82-year-old man they met on Match.com. It's a cute story, but it turns out the woman lied on her profile. She's actually only 88.
All right, I got one for you here. woman phones up her husband at work and she says, yeah, I've really got to talk to you. And he says, well, you know, I'm really up to my neck in work today. She says, well, I've got some good news and I got some bad news for you. And he says, all right, honey, but just, you know, give me the good news, because right now I just don't have the time. She says, well, the airbag works. All right. And here's the next one, and I think you'll enjoy this one. In light of the rising frequency of human grizzly bear conflicts, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is advising hikers, hunters, and fishermen to take extra precautions and keep alert of bears while in the field. They advise that outdoorsmen wear noisy little bells on their clothing so as to not startle the bears that aren't expecting them. Yeah. They also advise outdoorsmen to carry pepper spray with them in case of an encounter with a bear. It is also a good idea to watch out for fresh signs of bear activity. Outdoorsmen should recognize the difference between a black bear and a grizzly bear dung. Black bear dung is smaller and contains lots of berries and squirrel fur. Grizzly bear dung has little bells in it and smells like pepper.
Oh, jeez. I didn't see that coming. but that is true. They in Montana, they told you to put the little bells on your shoelaces or bootlaces. Bears get pissed off when they're surprised. You don't do surprise parties for bears.
No, they'll shy away if they know you're there. But if you surprise them, yeah, they're running. All right. Well, Andrew Malcolm, the prince of Twitter, the regent of redstate.com at AH Malcolm on the Twitters. Is great talking to you again. Can't wait till we're doing it again next week.
Are we doing it again next week? We got President's Day someday in here. Oh, Valentine's Day. Oh, after that comes first. Okay. All right. We'll do it next week. That's great.
I don't want to know about any special arrangements you want for Valentine's Day, Andrew. Yeah, it's not that kind of podcast.
Never mind. All right, Ed. We'll see you. Thanks, everybody.